meet more strong labor union activists. And that's pretty much it. But we're still active in the community, Madam President, and looking forward to our meeting on next week.
Okay, well, wonderful. Okay, it's almost time for us to wrap it up. Looks like that half an hour just kind of flew by. Mm-hmm. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Pat Daniels once again for bringing to the forefront and for our listeners to hear about Constructing Hope, and also bringing us a gift named Jacqueline to really put some meat on the bones from last month, and really getting out there and encouraging people that life really is not over unless you give up.
Right.
And this young lady definitely has not given up. And so with that, we'll close. I'd like to remind our viewers that, or our listeners, that our Coalition of Black Trade Unionists meeting, we meet every Tuesday at the William Lucy Building, located at 6025 East Burnside. The meeting's at 6 o'clock. So again, with that, holla. We'll be checking you out next month. Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
We're at the Erez Crossing, which is where you enter Gaza from. So apparently, when you go into Gaza, you have to walk until you get to the first town there. And apparently that walk is very dangerous.
KABU is a proud co-sponsor of Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Thursday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University's Smith Center, room 338. Guest speaker will be Stephen Saleta, former Virginia Tech professor. That's Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom, sponsored by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, on Thursday, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University, Smith Center, room 338. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU is a proud co-sponsor of Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. Susan Griffin is an internationally celebrated writer who will speak on the false divisions our culture makes between body and soul, masculine and feminine, self and other, that allow us to hide from our own knowledge. Again, that's Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Driving someone else's car, the local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. A Billy fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded, knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost. They saw he was severely reprimanded. Take me home, come and lay, help us lay young Billy down.
Good evening. How's everybody tonight? This is Prison Pipeline. I'm Ruth Kovach, your host. Tonight I have a guest, Dave Friesman. And we both visit CRCI, Columbia River Correctional Institution, every Wednesday night together. And I'm invited Dave to be with me tonight to tell me a bit about why he does that and what he thinks about it. And by the way, his last name is Kreisman. Some of the stuff we printed and released about it said his last name was Kirkman, but that's a mistake, and for that I humbly apologize because it was my mistake, and his last name is Kreisman. So, good evening, Dave Kreisman. How are you tonight?
Hi, Ruth. I'm good.
Okay. And you're ready to talk about prison issues with me.
Yeah.
So, why do you volunteer to visit prisons?
Well, so I'm very interested in how people change and kind of what that, you know, what that takes, and you know, when people decide to change and kind of the effort that they have to go through. I think it's an incredibly difficult and challenging thing that we've all kind of had to deal with a little bit at one point or another in our lives. But some of us kind of go through bigger changes than others. And these guys are going through a really big change. And I think they deserve all the support they can get for that.
Well, I'm glad to hear what you've said because you get to stay for the next 25 minutes because I also believe in change. There are some who don't believe in change. They make ridiculous statements like once a thief, always a thief. And that's just absurd. If we didn't believe in change, we wouldn't have divorce. We wouldn't have different religions. We wouldn't have war. We wouldn't have anything that's...
Yeah. We wouldn't have redemption or...
Right.
Yeah.
So what is it like when you go to visit the prison? Is it...
It's a big imposing facility, you know, it's a big building with guards and barbed wire and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But you have to, you know, go and sign up. You got to get through the initial kind of double gates and then you have to have the right kind of clothing on.
I hear once that you had blue jeans on.
Yeah.
And thou shalt not wear blue jeans when you visit a prison. Right?
Yeah. I didn't get the memo that first time. And Harry Olson, the guy who runs Phoenix Rising Transitions, he was good enough to run me over to Walmart. We were a little late for the class that day because I had to buy a pair of khakis. But yeah, so there's all these rules, of course, tons of rules around what you can wear and what you can bring in and how you can interact with the prisoners. This Saturday, I took the Department of Corrections volunteer training class where they went through a lot of these rules. And yeah, there's all kinds of...
But the rules make sense, don't they?
They do.
We're talking about institutional living, which is a lot of people from very diverse backgrounds and diverse skills. And if you didn't have rules, you couldn't hold it together.
Yeah. There's reasons for all the rules. Okay. There are. But you got to learn about all that and what you can and can't do. And there's a list, of course, that you have to be on, and a pre-approved list. If you're not on the list, you don't get in. And, you know, unfortunately, that's happened to me once. And, you know, so be it. You know, it's the bureaucracy that you got to deal with.
But do you do it because I'm going to use the word enjoy it?
Yes, I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it. I enjoy talking with the guys because they're just... They're regular guys, and you know, and they're interested in having real, honest conversations with real people. And
do you have anything in common with these prisoners, these thieves and murderers?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think us as human beings, we have way, way more in common with any of us than we do differences. Really, we make a big deal out of the differences.
I know. We've been at meetings where Harry Olson, who was the Phoenix Rising Transitions person that we all know and respect and love for all the work he does.
Yeah, he's great.
He has relational meetings, and he has us get on one-to-one conversations, and he usually pairs up a visitor with someone who is one of the incarcerated folks. And he often suggests we look for something we have in common, and the most common denominator is family. You have a family?
Oh, yeah.
And children?
Yeah.
You know, and most of the folks in prison have families and children.
Yes, they do.
And you feel bad if you don't hear from them or can't keep in touch with them. They feel bad when they don't keep in touch.
Yeah. Well, and it's a big motivator. Family is a big motivator for changing, too, for wanting to be a better person so that you can be there for your family. I mean.
Absolutely.
I've done that. I mean, I've had to go through that for my sons. Uh-huh. That's a big thing.
Well, we had a person... last time that I was at one of our gatherings, who spoke to his daughter, who's 15 years old, and he hadn't spoken to her since she's 3 years old. And I wouldn't name any names, but if anybody recognizes who they are and that I'm talking about you, we were all so happy that that conversation went well. He talked to his 15-year-old daughter that he hadn't spoken to since she was three, and it was just so beautiful that the fact that he's been in and out of prison and so on, that's still her daddy, and she's still his little girl and so on.
Yeah.
It was really, family is very important, and as you said, it's such a motivator for changing, trying to be a decent person. So
Yeah, one of the guys I just talked with recently, too, he had a visit from four of his seven kids recently.
And, four of the seven. Oh,
yeah, and he was just jazzed about that. And that's a reason for why he wants to turn himself around and get out there and be not be in prison,
right?
Be a productive member of society so that he can see them and he can have that relationship with them as they're growing up, because he's missing out.
They have programs for the men who become fathers while they're incarcerated. They go to prison at a time while maybe the wife is pregnant or the baby is only a month or two old.
Yeah.
And then within the prison, they have the classes where they talk to them about what it's like to be a father to a little baby. And, you know, it's not easy to bring a newborn or a three-month-old or a six-month-old or a toddler to visit daddy when he's in prison. And so keeping in touch and so on, there's some guidance provided to the prisoners, which I think is very valuable and very much appreciated by the guys.
Yeah.
So when you do this, what's in it for you?
Well, you know, I've made a few changes in my life at different points in my own history, and I'm at another transition point in my life now where I'm trying to look at myself, look internally.
Well, now they can't see you, and I don't expect you to tell me your age, but how old are your children?
My sons are 22 and 24.
So you're not a kid anymore?
No.
Okay. So what you're saying has, when you say you've made changes, you've had time to make quite a few changes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And now I'm an empty nester. You know, sons off to college, they're finishing college, and kind of that responsibility and that part of my life and that, frankly, a primary driver and motivator for my life is kind of coming to a close. So I'm at a point where I can reinvent myself, kind of decide who I want to be now. And in essence, that's kind of what these guys are doing. And so I'm really interested to kind of learn from them.
Well, the first time you showed up, it was sort of, I thought, what's this guy doing here? You didn't seem to have any reason why you wanted to come volunteer and the prisoners. And when I say
no,
what's
tragic
in it for
story
you,
or anything.
Yeah, no tragic story, you know.
No.
Yeah, you did say one member of your family had been incarcerated, but it wasn't a close person. It wasn't that big an influence on your lifestyle or anything, as if it was someone of your household.
Yeah, it was a cousin. Who, yeah.
But
I did go visit her, and it was a really interesting experience. But I learned, that did kind of teach me a little bit about how important it is for the family and the community support to the people who are in the prisons.
Well, tell me more about that. What makes you think it's important?
Well, there's a number of aspects to that. I mean, first of all, the way our justice system works of, you know, sentencing and then convicting somebody and then all these mandatory sentences and stuff, it tends to dehumanize people, right? Mm-hmm. And this bureaucracy and this institution that you're in with all these rules, it also, you know, it's a real dehumanizing environment. And these, I think the people, you know, if they want to, they're trying to hold on to their humanity and they want to become better people, they need that connection with family and people who see them as individuals who are important.
Well, I like to think of this Prison Pipeline show as an outreach to friends and family of folks who have been incarcerated for any reason at all. And you're putting in a good plug for one of the things I talk about often, and that is if you have someone in lockdown, go see them. Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They need it.
Yeah.
And you need it.
Yeah.
You need to see them change. You need to see this person who made some mistakes, depending on their age when things happen, but sometimes a goofy, wild kid who makes a lot of bad choices is put away, and 8 years later, he's a man. He's different person. He has different values. And if that change is a shock to you when he comes out, I would say you haven't seen enough of him, because it doesn't happen all of a sudden. It's a gradual change, and it's a result of a great deal of connection to the family and the family's connection to him. And
I think my kind of feelings are that around this is that as a society and sometimes as, you know, as individuals, you know, who know these people who are in prison, we tend to, put them away in a box, you know.
Right.
They're off in prison and kind of they're out of sight, out of mind, and we don't have to worry about them.
But, well, he made his mistake. He'll pay the price. I'll see him when he gets out.
Yeah, so cold. But that's so ridiculous. And, you know, these are real individuals who are, you know, whether we like it or not, they're part of our society. They're part of who we are as a people, frankly. And by just ignoring them and cutting them off, we're ignoring a part of ourselves, of our, you know, our national identity, our individual identities.
Now, when you go to visit someone and you discuss their crime and they tell you what they've done, and sometimes they have remorse, and sometimes they have a great revelation of how goofy they were to have done this, and sometimes they have regrets, and sometimes they have anger, and so on. Doesn't that kind of tell you that if they're telling you that, a volunteer that they never met until this day when they're just venting and pouring it all out, the family should be there to hear them saying all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The family should share that with them, and they should be able to let the family know that these revelations are coming to them as they sit there in that cell and wonder what they're doing there and so on.
Yeah. I mean, as
so the visits are important for both the family and the incarcerated person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as family, that connection of family never goes away. I mean, you can like to pretend it has gone away, or you've repudiated somebody, or, you know, whatever term you like to think, that they're not your brother or your son or whatever anymore.
You can disown them.
But that's, you know, that's a make-believe fiction. You know, real life isn't that simple. And if you don't maintain that contact or kind of that relationship, then they are changing, and they may not be changing in ways that you like or that you're getting input into. As you know, it's and as you said, when they come out, then they won't be somebody that you recognize, and they're still family.
So does this volunteer work that you're doing with prison issues in general, does that influence you in anything else in your life? I mean, do you think that you're really, I'm back to the what's in it for you. Mm. Do you feel like you're learning something about people, or
One of the last sessions we got into, one of the things I really enjoy about the Phoenix Rising Transitions program is that Harry brings in these readings about philosophy or psychology. And I think those are terrific. And it's great for the guys
to be.
They're
pretty heavy sometimes.
Yeah, they are heavy.
In fact, we take turns reading a paragraph, and after two or three paragraphs, we have to stop, and Harry has to explain to us what it's about.
To me, those conversations are a big draw for me. I think I'm learning from those, as well as the guys are learning, and like this distinction between kind of the external world and the internal world, and the internal world of all these, you know, feelings and motivations and thoughts that we have, and the patterns of thinking that we have, and the identifications that we have inside of ourselves of, you know, who we think we are. Those are all, you know. You don't see those things talked about very much in our culture today. Mm-hmm. And these guys are really going through that because they're thinking about who they are, and they're trying to change their own thought patterns. And this is hard work. And I think I'm learning a lot about that, you know, how that works and what kind of things you can, you know, we should be looking at or good to look at. And these guys are, I mean, I'm glad to be able to help support them in the work that they're doing, but I'm learning a lot out of it too.
You know, David, I wish people could see you, because the excitement and the animation as you say all of these things, it's so clear to me that when I say what's in it for you, you get so much out of it. You're so happy to be a part of watching these transitions in their personality and in their plans and in their goals and in their values. And
Yeah, well, I definitely am, and I also feel lucky to be part of the program, the Phoenix Rising Transitions program, because I think, you know, maybe I'm a bit biased here, but I think I'm seeing some of the best of the best of the prison population.
We always see the best of the best. I have told my friends and family who say, you know, what do you want to hang around with those thieves and murderers for? I say, no, that's not who I hang around with. Mm-hmm. Everyone who walks through the door to any of the meetings that we provide has made a decision that they are looking at internally and they want to change and evaluate what they do and why they do it. And I call it the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
I wish that every person that I knew did as much internalizing and as much thinking about themselves and as much concern with looking at their values as the folks who have been locked up for a couple of years managed to do.
And how their actions have impacted others, and just all kinds of things that you don't tend to see that amount of introspection in society at large.
And I've done it enough years. I've seen a few guys that when I first met them, when I would visit them in the prison, they were kind of hostile, and they didn't care how much they cursed. They kind of banged things around, and they just shrugged their shoulders when you asked them questions they didn't want to answer. And then after visiting them, because I've done this like more than 10 years now, after I've talked to them, the same person sometimes for 2 or 3 years, they're the ones that contribute so much to the discussions they've thought about. You know, they go through the change. It's really beautiful to see that they can change. And
Well, I think, you know, I'm lucky in that respect. I haven't had to work with guys in the prison who are in denial or don't want to be part of it. All the guys that I have talked to are straight up about, you know, they made mistakes.
Well, that was my point when I say if they walk through the door, I've got the cream of the crop, because before they come to our meetings, they've made a decision that they want to look at themselves and internalize, and they want to evaluate what their goals are, and they're willing to read these heavy readings that Harry brings in and to think about.
Bear with it.
Right.
Well, and I think that's another really cool aspect of the Phoenix Rising Transition Program, which is that the guys who are in the program actually select and vet guys who are going to join. So it's in their interest to only pick guys who are serious about changing.
And of course, kudos to Harry Olson for the Rising Transition Program.
Yeah.
And not only does he do some of the things we talked about here on this program tonight, but he really helps the guys find employment and housing. And he's very selective. He has a Phoenix House, which is a place that provides housing for them when they're first released. And he's very selective. If he doesn't think they're ready to make a change and to work well with the other people in the program.
Well, the guys who are in the house are selective too about who is a good fit to come in.
They don't want any troublemakers. No.
And they hold each other accountable. I think there's a large sense of camaraderie among the guys, because they'll take an active role in making sure that other guys who come out of prison are keeping up their end of the deal and are sticking to the right
path. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So why do you do volunteer work, as if it isn't obvious to everyone who's heard you talk for a few minutes?
Well, because I feel that I'm learning from it as well as I'm helping others, you know, being of service. And then I'm learning and growing myself through the experience. And I get to meet lots of other incredible people, people like Justin Woodruff as well, who's been helping Harry. And a lot
Justin's background is he had spent some time in lockdown for quite a few years, and he's come out and has dedicated his life to his career, his entire being to helping others transition from being inside to outside. And he's really respected by the fellows that we talk to, because they know he's been there, done that.
Justin's another great guy.
Very wise. He's learned a lot from all of his experience, the good and the bad.
Yeah. And just, you know, for me, being able to kind of work with these people and interact with them and kind of do what I can to help their mission and what they're doing is just, I think that's just terrific.
Well, David, I think you and I are pretty good visitors to them, but Justin is like a perfect visitor because he's been there, done that, and he's very inspiring to the men that he can come out and have a good life. But he's not alone. I mean, there are so many that come out. In fact, there was once a movement to pass a law that people who had ever been incarcerated could not be counselors. And those of us who have been working with some of this fought it quite a bit. And the fact is, if you've been there, done that, you're the best counselor a person can find.
Yeah. Again,
you get it.
Based on this idea that people don't change.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, yeah, that really frustrates me about our society. And you'll hear people talk about, oh, yeah, people change, and oh, yeah, that's great. But our society and our institutions and our bureaucracies just don't support that. They're not set up.
Well, it should be obvious thing for folks who are listening from everything we've said, but I'm going to say it anyway. What do you think it means to the incarcerated folks to have visitors from the outside?
Yeah. Well, here I'm going to go by what the guys at the Phoenix classes have told me, which is how important it is to them.
The prisoners you've talked to.
Yes, the prisoners in the Wednesday night classes that we go into. And they've just, you know, they've expressed that it's the one time in their week when they don't feel like, you know, just caged, you know, animals or whatever. They feel human and that they can talk to another human being who is going to open up and, you know, treat them as a human, and they can share that with somebody.
Well, I didn't know how rare it was, but the very first time that I visited a prison and went to one of these things with Harry Olson, I spoke to someone, and we talked for a few minutes, and it was time to stop the discussion, and he leaned over and he said, "I appreciate talking to you so much. You are the first person that I have talked to that wasn't prison personnel or prison inmates in 4 years." Yeah. And I thought, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Like, how would that be if that was the limit of your communication when you're supposed to be changing and trying to work your way out?
Yeah, I can only imagine. Again, you're not getting the support to make those changes. People, they need to be seen as individuals, and they need to be seen for who they really are, and be able to, you know, make amends and acknowledge the wrongs that they've done, but then sincerely want to change and have somebody who can see that in them and can see that they can be a new person and believe in that.
Well, I'm going to wrap it up with one last question, but I do want to say before we leave the things we've talked about. A point we've really tried hard to make is if you know someone who's incarcerated for any reason and you mean anything to them or they mean anything to you, visiting is so important. And if you can't visit because of distance or time or whatever reason, send them a letter, send them a card. Phone calls are very difficult, but letters and visits are so important. I cannot say strongly enough that it's one of the greatest acts of kindness you could possibly do, and you think you're doing it for them, but I guarantee you at the end of the visit you'll know you did it for yourself too, because that's the way it works. So what's your conclusion? Does incarceration work?
Well, you know, I think that depends a lot on the individual and the circumstances. You know, I think incarceration can be a good time of introspection and a good time to, you know, be away from the environment and the lifestyle that might have been part of the problem. And a lot of the guys that I work with in Phoenix Rising are taking good advantage of that. But if somebody who goes into prison isn't ready for that change, then I don't know that it is a good thing. It can tend to kind of reinforce the bad thinking and kind of reinforce their culture that they're in instead of helping them to change.
Yes, when I meet someone where their anger is still very strong, they're very angry. Sometimes they're angry about being locked up. Sometimes they're angry about being caught. Not what they did was wrong, but they're angry they got caught. They're angry about the mandatory sentencing that they think they've been sent away for too many years considering the offense and so on. You know, it's not just with incarcerated people. Anyone who has anger in the way of dealing with a situation has limited the help they can get. Your anger can just... You just have to put aside the anger and look at things in a very constructive way in order to find a productive solution.
Yeah. And even those who do want to change and make a productive, you know, change in their life, they need the human contact.
That's right.
And just kind of putting them away in a hole isn't going to help them.
That's right. So incarceration works. One of the biggest reasons, I think, is it gives them time to sit and think and figure things out. Mm-hmm. And we are a humane society, and fortunately most of the prison systems do provide various programs and counseling that are available. There's certainly many drug and alcohol addiction programs going on in the prisons and so on, so that those who are first sent there do come out better people and different people.
And the nonviolent communication.
Well, David, it's been great to talk to you. I think you're the kind of person who is has the enthusiasm for this volunteer work that I wish everyone had. I don't know if I haven't gotten the latest statistics, but last time I looked, over 5,000 people in the state of Oregon visit a prison at least once a week, either as a family member or as a volunteer. And if you're not one of them, think about it. You might do a lot of good. And David, thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you Wednesday night at CRCI.
Thank you, Ruth. Thanks for having me here.
Sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some will tell the tale. I believe for the
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. Susan Griffin is an internationally celebrated writer who will speak on the false divisions our culture makes between body and soul, masculine and feminine, self and other, that allow us to hide from our own knowledge. Again, that's Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under